problem. Great, I said. What do you have? Anything on her, other than she's in Trinity and she's running around wearing a fake name?
Sergeant Byrne says she's local, Sam said. Lives at Whitethorn House, maybe half a mile away with a bunch of other students. That's all he knows about her. I haven't talked to the housemates yet, because...
He gestured at Frank.
Because I begged him to hold off, Frank said smoothly.
I have this little idea I wanted to run by you two, before the investigation gets into full gear.
He arched an eyebrow towards the door and the uniforms.
Maybe we should go for a wander.
Why not? I said. The girl's body was doing something funny to the air in there, fizzing it, like the needle-thin wine the TV makes on mute. It was hard to think straight. If we stay in the same room for too long, the universe might turn into antimatter. I gave Frank his evidence bag back and wiped my hand on the side of my trousers. In the moment before I passed through the doorway, I turned my head and looked at her, over my shoulder. Frank had switched off his torch, but pulling back the brambles let in a flood of spring sun, and for the split second before my shadow blocked it again, she rose up blazing out of the darkness, tilted chin and a clenched fist in the wild arch of her throat, bright and bloodied and relentless as my own wrecked ghost. That was the last time I saw her. It didn't occur to me at the time. I had other stuff on my mind, and it seems impossible now. But those 10 minutes, sharp as a crease pressed straight across my life, that was the only time we were ever together.
The uniforms were slumped where we'd left them, like beanbags. Byrne was staring off into the middle distance in some kind of catatonic state. Doherty was examining one finger in a way that made me think he had been picking his nose.
Right,
Byrne said, once he surfaced from his trance and registered that we were back.
We'll be off, so. She's all yours.
Sometimes the local uniforms are pure diamond, reeling off details about everyone for miles around, listing half a dozen possible motives, handing you a prime suspect on a plate. Other times, all they want is to pass the hassle to you and get back to their game of go fish. This was obviously going to be other times.
We'll need you to hang on for a while, Sam said,
which I took as a good sign. The extent to which Frank had been running this show was making me edgy.
The technical bureau might want you to help with the search, and I'll be asking you to give me all the local info you can.
She's not local, sure,
Doherty said, wiping his finger on the side of his trousers. He was staring at me again.
Them up at Whitethorn House, they're blow-ins. They've nothing to do with Glenskeehy.
Lucky bastards,
Byrne mumbled to his chest.
She lived local, though, Sam said, patiently. And she died local. That means we'll be needing to canvass the area. You should probably give us a hand, seeing as you know your way around.
Byrne's head sank farther into his shoulders.
They're all mentlers round here, he said morosely. Stone mentlers, that's all you need to know.
Some of my best friends are mentlers, Frank said cheerfully. Think of it as a challenge.
He gave them a wave and headed off up the field, feet swishing wetly through the grass. Sam and I followed him. Even without looking, I could feel the worried little line between Sam's eyebrows, but I didn't have the energy to reassure him. Now I was out of that cottage, all I could feel was outrage, pure and simple. My face and my old name? It was like coming home one day and finding another girl coolly making dinner in your kitchen, wearing your comfiest jeans and singing along to your favorite CD. I was so furious I could barely breathe. I thought of that photo, and I wanted to punch my smile straight off her face.
Well, I said, when we caught up with Frank at the top of the field, that was fun. Can I go to work now?
TV must be a lot more entertaining than I thought, Frank said, doing impressed. If you're in this much of a hurry. Sunglasses.
I left the glasses where they were.
Unless this girl was a victim of domestic violence, and I'm not seeing anything that points that way. She's got sweet fuck all to do with me. So you dragged me out here, why exactly?
Hey, I've missed you, babe. Any excuse?
Frank grinned at me. I gave him a hairy look.
And you seriously figure she's fuck all to do with you? Let's see you say that when we're trying to ID her, and everyone you've ever known is freaking out and ringing up to give us your name.
All the anger deflated out of me, leaving a nasty hollow at the bottom of my stomach. Frank, the little bollocks, was right. As soon as this girl's face went into the papers alongside an appeal for her real name, there would be a tidal wave of people who'd known me as Lexi, her as Lexi, me as me, all of them wanting to know who was dead and who both of us had been if we weren't, in fact, Lexi Madison and General Hall of Mirrors Overload. Believe it or not, that was the first time it hit me. There was no way in the world for this to be as easy as, don't know her, don't want to know her, thanks for wasting my morning, see you around. Sam, I said, is there any way you could hold off on putting her picture out for a day or two, just till I can warn people? I had no idea how I was going to word this one. See, Aunt Louisa, we found this dead girl and... Interestingly, Frank said, now that you mention it, that fits right in with my little idea. There was a jumble of moss-covered boulders piled in the corner of the field. He pulled himself backwards onto them and sat there, one leg swinging. I'd seen that gleam in his eyes before. It always meant he was about to come out spectacularly casually with something totally outrageous. What, Frank? I said. Well, Frank began, getting comfortable against the rocks and folding his arms behind his head. We've got a unique opportunity here, haven't we? Shame to waste it.
We do,
Sam said.
We do,
I said.
Oh, yeah. Jesus, yeah.
That risky grin was starting at the corners of Frank's mouth.
We've got the chance,
he said, taking his time.
We've got the chance to investigate a murder case from the inside. We've got the chance to place an experienced undercover officer smack in the middle of a murder victim's life.
We both stared at him.
When have you ever seen anything like that before? It's beautiful, Cass. It's a work of art.
Work of arse, more like, I said.
What the hell are you on about, Frankie?
Frank spread his arms like it was obvious.
Look, you've been Lexi Madison before, right? You can be her again. You can't, no, hang on, hear me out. If she's not dead, just wounded, right? You can walk straight back into her life and pick up where she left off.
Oh my God, I said. This is why no bureau and no morgue guys. This is why you made me dress like a dork, so nobody notices you have a spare. I pulled my hat off and stuffed it back in my bag. Even for Frank, this had taken some fast thinking. Within seconds of arriving at the scene, he must have had this in his head.
You can get hold of info no cop would ever learn. You can get close to everyone she was close to. You can identify suspects.
You want to use her as bait? Sam said, too levelly.
I want to use her as a detective, mate, Frank said. Which is what she is last time I checked.
You want to put her in there so this fella will come back to finish the job? That's bait.
So, undercovers are bait all the time. I'm not asking her to do anything I wouldn't do myself in a heartbeat if...
No, Sam said. No way. Frank raised an eyebrow.
What are you, her ma?
I'm the lead investigator on this case and I'm saying no way.
You might want to think about it for more than 10 seconds, pal, before you...
I might as well not have been there.
Hello,
I said. They turned and stared at me.
Sorry,
Sam said, somewhere between sheepish and defiant.
Hi,
Frank said, grinning at me.
Frank,
I said, this is officially the looniest idea I've ever heard in my life. You are off your bloody trolley. You're up the wall and tickling the bricks. You are...
What's loony about it?
Frank demanded, injured.
Jesus,
I said. I ran my hands through my hair and turned full circle, trying to figure out where to start. Hills, fields, spaced out uniforms,
cottage with dead girl. This wasn't some messed up dream.
Okay, just for starters, it's impossible. I've never even heard of anything like this before.
But that's the beauty of it, Frank explained.
If you go under as someone who actually exists, it's for like half an hour, Frank, and it's to do something specific. It's to do a drop-off or a pick-up or something from a stranger. You're talking about me jumping right into the middle of this girl's life just because I look a bit like her?
A bit?
Do you even know what colour her eyes are? What if they're blue or...
Give me some credit, babe.
They're brown. Or what if she programs computers or plays tennis? What if she's left-handed? It can't be done. I'd be burned inside an hour.
Frank pulled a squashed pack of smokes out of his jacket pocket and fished out a cigarette. He had that glint in his eye again. He loves a challenge.
I have every faith in you.
Want a smoke?
No, I said, even though I did. I couldn't stop moving, up and down and around the patch of long grass between us.
I don't even like her, I wanted to say, which made no sense at all.
Frank shrugged and lit up.
Let me worry about whether it's possible. It might not be, I'll grant you that, but I'll figure that out as we go along. What's next?
Sam was looking away, his hands shoved deep in his pockets, leaving me to it.
Next, I said. It's somewhere out on the other side of unethical. This girl must have family, friends. You're going to tell them she's alive and well and just needs a few stitches while she's lying on a table in the morgue with Cooper slicing her open. Jesus, Frank!
She's living under a fake name, Cass, Frank said reasonably. You really think she's in touch with her family?
By the time we track them down, this will all be over. They'll never know the difference.
So what about her mates? The uniform said she lives with a bunch of others. What if she's got a boyfriend?
The people who care about her, Frank said, will want us to catch the guy who did this to her. Whatever it takes, that's what I'd want.
He blew smoke up at the sky. Sam's shoulders shifted. He thought Frank was just being smart-arsed. But Sam's never done undercover. He had no way of knowing. Undercovers are different.
There is nothing they won't do, to themselves or anyone else, to take their guy down.
There was no point in arguing with Frank on this one, because he meant what he had said. If his kid were killed, and someone kept that from him in order to get the guy, he would take it without a murmur. It's one of the most powerful lures of undercover, the ruthlessness, no borderlines, strong stuff, strong enough to take your breath away. It's one of the reasons I left.
And then what? I said. When it's over, you tell them, oops, by the way, we forgot to mention, that's a ringer. Your mate died 3 weeks ago. Or do I keep being Lexi Madison till I can die of old age?
Frank squinted into the sun, considering this.
Your wound can get infected, he said, brightening. You'll go into the ICU, and the doctors will try everything modern medicine can offer, but no go.
Jesus Christ on a bike, I said.
I felt like this was all I had said, all morning long.
What on earth is making this seem like a good idea to you?
What's next? Frank asked.
Come on, hit me.
Next, Sam said, still looking away down the lane.
It's bloody dangerous.
Frank raised one eyebrow and tilted his head at Sam, giving me a wicked private grin. For an off-balance second, I had to stop myself grinning back.
Next, I said. It's too late anyway. Byrne and Doherty and what's-his-name with the dog all know there's a dead woman in there. You're telling me you can get all three of them to keep their mouths shut just because it suits you? What's-his-name's probably told half of Wicklow already.
What's-his-name is Richard Doyle, and I'm not planning on getting him to keep his mouth shut. As soon as we're done here, I'm going to go congratulate him on saving this young woman's life. If he hadn't shown great presence of mind by calling us immediately, the outcome could have been tragic. He's a hero, and he can tell as many people as he likes. And you saw Byrne, babe. That's not a happy little member of our glorious brotherhood.
If I hint that there might be a transfer in it for him,
Not only will he keep his mouth shut, he'll keep Doherty shut too. Next?
Next, I said. It's pointless. Sam's worked dozens of murders, Frank, and he's solved most of them without needing to pull any whack job stunts. This thing you're talking about would take weeks to set up.
Days, anyway, Frank amended.
And by that time he'll have someone. At least he will if you don't fuck up his investigation by getting everyone to pretend there's no murder to begin with. All this will do is waste your time and mine and everyone else's.
Would it fuck up your investigation? Frank asked Sam.
Just hypothetically speaking, if you told the public, just for say a couple of days, that this was an assault, not a murder, would it?
Eventually Sam sighed. No, he said. Not really, no. There's not that much difference in investigating attempted murder and actual murder. And like Cassie said, we'll have to keep this pretty quiet for a few days anyway, till we find out who the victim is, so things don't get too confused, but that's not the point.
Okay, Frank said. Then here's what I suggest. Mostly you guys have a suspect within 72 hours, right?
Sam said nothing.
Right.
Right, Sam said. And there's no reason why this should be different.
No reason at all, Frank agreed pleasantly. Today's Thursday. Just through the weekend, we keep our options open. We don't tell civilians it's a murder. Cassie stays home, so there's no chance of the killer getting a glimpse of her. And we've got our ace up the sleeve if we decide to use it. I find out everything I can about this girl just in case. That would need doing anyway. Am I right? I won't get in your way. You've got my word on that. Like you said, you're bound to have someone in your sights by Sunday night. If you do, then I back off. Cassie goes back to DV, everything goes back to standard procedure, no harm done. If by any chance you don't, well, we've still got all our options.
Neither of us answered.
I'm only asking for 3 days, guys, Frank said. No commitment to anything. What damage can that do?
Sam looked marginally reassured by this, but I wasn't, because I knew how Frank works. A series of little tiny steps, each one looking perfectly safe and innocuous, until suddenly, bam, you're smack in the middle of something you really did not want to deal with.
But why, Frank? I asked. Answer me that, and yeah, fine. I'll spend a gorgeous spring weekend sitting in my flat watching crap telly instead of going out with my boyfriend like a normal human being. You're talking about throwing huge amounts of time and manpower at something that could well turn out to be completely pointless. Why?
Frank whipped a hand up to shade his eyes so he could stare at me.
Why? He repeated. Jesus, Cassie! Because we can! Because nobody in the history of police work has ever had a chance like this. Because it would be bloody amazing. What? You're not seeing that? What the fuck is wrong with you? Have you gone desk on me?
I felt like he had hauled off and punched me in the stomach. I stopped pacing and turned away, looking out over the hillside, away from Frank and Sam and from the uniforms twisting their heads into the cottage to gawp at wet, dead me. After a moment, Frank said behind me, softer,
"Sorry, Cass. I just wasn't expecting that. From the murder gang, sure, but not from you, of all people. I didn't think you meant... I thought you were just covering all the bases. I didn't realize."
He sounded genuinely stunned. I knew perfectly well he was working me, and I could have listed every tool he was using, but it didn't matter, because he was right. 5 years earlier, 1 year earlier, I would have been leaping for this dazzling, incomparable adventure right alongside him. I'd have been in there, checking whether the dead girl's ears were pierced and how she parted her hair. I looked out at the fields and thought, very distinctly and detachedly, what the fuck has happened to me? Okay, I said, finally. What you tell the press isn't my problem. You guys fight it out between you. I'll stay out of the way for the weekend, but Frank,
I'm not promising you anything else. No matter who Sam finds or doesn't find, this does not mean I'm doing it. Clear enough?
That's my girl, Frank said. I could hear the grin in his voice.
For a moment there, I thought the aliens had planted a chip in your brain.
Fuck off, Frank, I said, turning around.
Sam didn't look happy, but I couldn't worry about that just then. I needed to get away on my own and think about this.
I haven't said yes yet, Sam said.
That's your call, obviously, Frank said.
He didn't seem too worried. I knew he might have more of a fight on his hands than he expected. Sam is an easygoing guy, but every now and then he puts his foot down, and then trying to change his mind is like trying to push a house out of your way.
Just call it fast. If we're going with this for now anyway, we'll need to get an ambulance out here ASAP.
Let me know what you decide, I told Sam. I'm going home. See you tonight.
Frank's eyebrows shot up. Undercovers have an impressive grapevine all their own, but they mostly stay away from the general gossip, in a slightly pointed way, and Sam and I had been keeping things fairly quiet. Frank gave me an amused look, tongue rolling in his cheek. I ignored him.
I don't know when I'll finish up, Sam said.
I shrugged. I'm not going anywhere.
See you soon, babe,
Frank said happily, threw another cigarette, and waved goodbye. Sam walked me back down the field, close enough that his shoulder brushed mine protectively. I got the sense he didn't want me to have to pass the body on my own. Actually, I badly wanted to have another look at it, preferably by myself and for a long, silent time. But I could feel Frank's eyes on my back, so I didn't even turn my head as we passed the cottage.
I wanted to warn you, Sam said abruptly. Mackie said no. He was pretty insistent about it, and I wasn't thinking straight enough to... I should have. I'm sorry.
Obviously, Frank, like everyone else in my bloody universe, had heard the Operation Vestal rumors. He wanted to see how I'd take it, I said. Checking my nerve. And he's good at getting what he wants. It's okay.
This Mackie, is he a good cop?
I didn't know how to answer that. Good cop isn't a phrase we take lightly. It means a vast, complex constellation of things and a different one for every officer. I wasn't at all sure that Frank fits Sam's definition or even, come to think of it, mine.
He's smart as hell, I said, in the end. And he gets his man, one way or another. Are you going to give him his 3 days?
Sam sighed.
If you're all right with staying in this weekend, then yeah, I'd say I will. It'll do no harm actually keeping this case under the radar till we've some idea what we're dealing with. An ID, a suspect, something. It'll keep the confusion down. I'm not mad about giving her friends false hope, but sure, I suppose it could soften the blow. Having a few days to get used to the chance that she might not make it.
It was shaping up to be a gorgeous day. The sun was drying the grass, and it was so quiet I could hear tiny insects zigzagging in and out among the wildflowers. There was something about the green hillsides that made me edgy. Something stubborn and secretive. Like a turned back. It took me a second to figure out what it was. They were empty. Out of all Glenskeehy, not one person had come to see what was going on. Out in the lane, screened from the others by trees and hedges, Sam pulled me tight against him.
I thought it was you, he said into my hair.
His voice was low and shaken.
I thought it was you.
Chapter 2 I didn't actually spend the next 3 days watching crap telly, the way I'd said to Frank. I'm not good at sitting still to begin with. And when I'm edgy, I need to move. So, I'm in this job for the thrills, me. I cleaned. I scrubbed, hoovered and polished every inch of my flat, down to the baseboards and the inside of the cooker. I took down the curtains, washed them in the bath and pegged them to the fire escape to dry. I hung my duvet off the windowsill and whacked it with a spatula to get the dust out. I would have painted the walls if I'd had paint. I actually considered putting on my dork disguise and finding a DIY shop. But I'd promised Frank, so I cleaned the back of the cistern instead. And I thought about what Frank had said to me. You, of all people. After Operation Vestal, I transferred out of murder. DV might not be much of a challenge by comparison, but God, it's peaceful. Although I know that's a strange word to choose. Either someone hit someone, or he didn't. It's as simple as that. And all you have to do is figure out which one it is and how to make them knock it off. DV is straightforward and it's unequivocally useful, and I wanted that badly. I was so bloody tired of high stakes and ethical dilemmas and complications. You, of all people, have you gone desk on me? My nice work suit, ironed and hung on the wardrobe door ready for Monday, made me feel queasy. Finally, I couldn't look at it anymore. I threw it in the wardrobe and slammed the door on it. And of course, I thought, all the time, under everything I did, about the dead girl. I felt like there must have been some clue in her face, some secret message in a code only I could read, if I just had the wits or the time to spot it. If I'd still been in murder, I would have nicked a crime scene shot or a copy of her ID, taken it home with me to look at in private. Sam would have brought me one if I'd asked, but I didn't. Somewhere out there, sometime in these 3 days, Cooper would be doing the autopsy. The idea bent my brain. I had never seen anyone who looked anything like me before. Dublin is full of scary girls who, I swear to God, are actually the same person, or at least come out of the same fake tan bottle. Me? I may not be a five-star babe, but I am not generic. My mother's father was French, and somehow the French and the Irish combined into something specific and pretty distinctive. I don't have brothers or sisters. What I mainly have is aunts, uncles, and large, cheerful gangs of second cousins, and none of them look anything like me. My parents died when I was 5. She was a cabaret singer. He was a journalist. He was driving her home from a gig in Kilkenny one wet December night, and they hit a slick patch of road. Their car flipped 3 times. He was probably speeding. And lay upside down in a field till a farmer saw the lights and went to investigate. He died the next day. She never made it into the ambulance. I tell people this early on, to get it out of the way. Everyone always gets either tongue-tied or gooey. You must miss them so much. And the better we know each other, the longer they feel the gooey stage needs to last. I never know how to answer. Given that I was 5 and that it was more than 25 years ago, I think it's safe to say I'm more or less over it. I wish I remembered them enough to miss them. But all I can miss is the idea, and sometimes the songs my mother used to sing me. And I don't tell people about that. I was lucky. Thousands of other kids in that situation have slipped through the cracks, fallen into foster care or nightmare industrial schools. But on their way to the gig, my parents had dropped me off to spend the night in Wicklow with my father's sister and her husband. I remember phones ringing in the middle of the night, quick footsteps on stairs and urgent murmuring in the corridor, a car starting, people going in and out for what seemed like days. And then Aunt Louisa sitting me down in the dim living room and explaining that I was going to stay there for a while longer because my mother and father weren't coming back. She was a lot older than my father, and she and Uncle Gerard don't have kids. He's a historian. They play bridge a lot. I don't think they ever really got used to the idea that I lived there. They gave me the spare room, complete with a high double bed and small breakable ornaments and an inappropriate print of Venus Rising, and looked faintly worried when I got old enough that I wanted to put up posters of my own. But for 12 and a half years they fed me, sent me to school and gymnastics classes and music lessons,
patted me vaguely but affectionately on the head whenever I was within reach, and left me alone. In exchange, I made sure they didn't find out when I mitched off school, fell off things I shouldn't have been climbing, got detention, or started to smoke. It was, this always seems to shock people all over again, a happy childhood. For the first few months I spent a lot of time at the bottom of the garden, crying till I threw up and yelling rude words at neighborhood kids who tried to make friends. But children are pragmatic. They come alive and kicking out of a whole lot worse than orphanhood. And I could only hold out so long against the fact that nothing would bring my parents back and against the thousand vivid things around me. Emma next door, hanging over the wall and my new bike glinting red in the sunshine and the half-wild kittens in the garden shed, all fidgeting insistently while they waited for me to wake up again and come out to play. I found out early that you can throw yourself away, missing what you've lost. I weaned myself on the nostalgia equivalent of methadone. Less addictive, less obvious, less likely to make you crazy. Missing what I had never had. When my new mates and I bought Curly Whirly bars at the shop, I saved half of mine for my imaginary sister. I kept them at the bottom of my wardrobe, where they turned into sticky puddles and got in my shoes. I left room in the double bed for her, when Emma or someone wasn't sleeping over. When horrible Billy McIntyre, who sat behind me in school, wiped snots on my plaits, my imaginary brother beat him up till I learned to do it myself. In my mind, adults looked at us, three matching dark heads all in a row, and said, "Ah, God, you'd know their family, aren't they the spit of each other?" It wasn't affection I was after, nothing like that. What I wanted was someone I belonged with, beyond any doubt or denial. Someone where every glance was a guarantee, solid proof that we were stuck to each other for life. In photographs, I can see a resemblance to my mother. Nobody else, ever. I don't know if you can imagine this. Every one of my school friends had the family nose or her father's hair or the same eyes as her sister's. Even this girl, Jenny Bailey, who was adopted, looked like she was probably the rest of the class's cousin. This was the 80s. Everyone in Ireland was related one way or another. When I was a kid looking for things to get angsty about, being without this felt like having no reflection. There was nothing to prove I had a right to be here. I could have come from anywhere. Dropped by aliens. Swapped by elves. Built in a test tube by the CIA. And if they showed up one day to take me back, there would be nothing in the world to hold me here. If this mystery girl had walked into my classroom one morning, back then, it would have made my year. Since she didn't, I grew up, got a grip, and stopped thinking about it. Now, all of a sudden, I had the best reflection on the block, and I didn't like it one bit. I had got used to being just me, no links to anyone. This girl was a link like a handcuff, slapped on my wrist out of nowhere and tightened till it bit to the bone. And I knew how she had picked up the Lexi Madison ID. It was in my head, bright and hard as broken glass, clear as if it had happened to me, and I didn't like this either. Somewhere in town, at the bar, in a crowded pub, or flipping through clothes in a shop, and behind her, "Lexi! Lexi Madison! God, I hadn't seen you in ages!" And after that it would have been just a matter of playing it carefully and asking the right casual questions. "It's been so long, I can't even remember. What was I doing last time I saw you?" Picking her way delicately to everything she needed to know. She had been no dummy, this girl. Plenty of murder cases turn into knockdown, drag-out battles of wits. But this was different. This was the first time I had felt like my real opponent wasn't the murderer, but the victim. Defiant, clenching her secrets white-knuckle tight and evenly, perfectly matched against me in every way, too close to call. By Saturday lunchtime, I had made myself nuts enough that I had climbed up on the kitchen counter, took down my official stuff shoebox from the top of a cupboard, dumped the documents on the floor, and went through them for my birth cert,
Maddox, Cassandra Jean, female, 6 pounds, 10 ounces. Type of birth, single.
Idiot, I said out loud, and climbed back up on the counter.
That afternoon, Frank called round. At this stage, I was so stir-crazy, my flat is small, I'd run out of stuff to clean, that I was actually glad to hear his voice over the intercom. What year is it? I asked when he reached the top of the stairs. Who's the president?
Quit bitching, he said, giving me a one-armed hug around the neck.
You've got this whole lovely flat to play in. You could be a sniper stuck in a hide, not moving a muscle for days on end and pissing into a bottle. And I brought you supplies.
He handed me a plastic bag. All the main food groups, chocolate biscuits, smokes, ground coffee, and 2 bottles of wine.
You're a gem, Frank, I said. You know me too well.
He did, too. 4 years on, and he had remembered I like Lucky Strike lights. The feeling wasn't a reassuring one, but then he hadn't intended it to be.
Frank raised a non-committal eyebrow.
Got a corkscrew?
My antennae went up, but I can hold my booze fairly well, and Frank had to know I wasn't stupid enough to get drunk with him. I threw him a corkscrew and rummaged for glasses.
Nice place you've got here, he said, going to work on the first bottle.
I was scared I'd find you in some foul yuppie apartment with chrome surfaces.
On a cop's salary.
Dublin housing prices are a lot like New York ones, except that in New York, you get New York for your money. My flat is one mid-sized room, on the top floor of a tall, converted Georgian house. It has the original wrought iron fireplace, enough room for a futon and a sofa, and all my books. A tipsy slant to the floor in one corner, a family of owls living in the roof space, and a view of Sandy Mount Beach. I like it.
On 2 cop salaries, aren't you going out with our boy Sammy?
I sat on the futon and held out the glasses for him to pour.
Only for a couple of months. We're not at the living in sin stage yet.
I thought it was longer. He seemed pretty protective on Thursday.
Is it true, love?
None of your business, I said, clinking my glass against his. Cheers. Now, what are you doing here?
Frank looked injured.
I thought you could use the company. I got to feeling guilty about leaving you stuck here all on your own.
I gave him a dirty look. He realized it wasn't working and grinned.
You're too smart for your own good, do you know that?
I didn't want you getting hungry or bored or desperate for a smoke and heading out to the shop.
The odds are 1,000 to 1 against you being spotted by anyone who knows our girl. But why take chances?
This was plausible enough. But Frank has always had a habit of tossing lures in a few directions at once to distract you from the hook in the middle.
I still got no intention of doing this, Frankie, I said.
Fair enough, Frank said, unperturbed.
He took a big swig of his wine and settled himself more comfortably on the sofa.
I had a chat with the brass, by the way, and this is now officially a joint investigation, murder and undercover.
But your boyfriend probably already told you that.
He hadn't. Sam had stayed at his own place the last couple of nights.
I'll be up at 6, sure. No reason you should be as well, unless you need me to come over. Will you be okay on your own?
I hadn't seen him since the murder scene.
I'm sure everyone's delighted, I said.
Joint investigations are a pain in the hole. They always end up getting spectacularly bogged down in endless, pointless testosterone competitions.
Frank shrugged. They'll survive. Want to hear what we've got on this girl so far?
Of course I did. I wanted it the way an alcoholic must want booze, badly enough to shove aside the hard knowledge that this was a truly lousy idea.
You might as well tell me, I said, since you're here.
Beautiful, Frank said, rummaging through the plastic bag for the cigarettes.
Okay. She first shows up in February 2002, when she pulls Alexandra Madison's birth cert and uses it to open a bank account. She uses the birth cert an account statement, and her face to pull your old records from UCD. And she uses those to get into Trinity to do a PhD in English.
Organized, I said.
Oh, yeah, organized, creative, and persuasive. She was a natural at this. I couldn't have done it better myself. She never tried to sign on the dole, which was smart. Just got herself a job in a cafe in town, worked there full-time for the summer, then started at Trinity come October. Her thesis title is, you'll like this, Other Voices, Identity, Concealment, and Truth. It's about women who wrote under other identities.
Cute, I said. So she had a sense of humor.
Frank gave me a quizzical look.
We don't have to like her, babe, he said after a moment. We just have to find out who killed her.
You do. I don't. Got anything else?
He flipped a smoke between his lips and found his lighter.
Okay, so she's in Trinity, she makes friends with four other English postgrads, hangs out almost exclusively with them. Last September, one of them inherits a house from his great-uncle, and they all move into it. Whitethorn House, it's called. Southside Glenskeehy, just over half a mile from where she was found. On Wednesday night, she goes for a walk and never comes home. The other four alibi each other.
Which you could have told me over the phone, I said.
Ah, Frank said, rummaging in his jacket pocket. But I couldn't have shown you these. Here we go, the Fantastic Four, her housemates.
He pulled out a handful of photos and spread them on the table. One of them was a snapshot, taken on a winter day, thin grey sky and a sprinkle of snow on the ground. Five people in front of a big Georgian house, heads tilted together and hair blown sideways in a swirl of wind. Lexi was in the middle, bundled in that same pea coat and laughing. And my mind did that wild lurch and swerve again. When was I? Frank was watching me like a hunting dog. I put the photo down. The other shots were stills, pulled off some kind of home video. They had that look, blurry edges where people were moving, and printed out in the murder squad room. The printer always leaves a streak across the top right corner. Four full-length shots. Four blown-up headshots, all taken in the same room against the same ratty wallpaper striped with tiny flowers. There was a huge fir tree. No decorations, caught in the corner of two of the shots, just before Christmas.
Daniel March, Frank said, pointing. Not Dan, not God forbid Danny. Daniel, he's the one who inherited the house. Only child, orphaned from an old Anglo-Irish family. Grandfather lost most of their money in dodgy deals in the 50s, but there's enough left to give Danny boy a small income. He's on a scholarship, so he doesn't have fees to pay. Doing a PhD on, I kid you not, the inanimate object as narrator in early medieval epic poetry.
No idiot then, I said. Daniel was a big guy, well over 6 foot and built to match, with glossy dark hair and a square jaw. He was sitting in a wing-back chair, delicately lifting a glass bauble out of its box and glancing up at the camera. His clothes, white shirt, black trousers, soft grey sweater, looked expensive. In the close-up, his eyes, behind steel-rimmed glasses, were grey and cool as stone.
Definitely no idiot. None of them are. But especially not him. You'll need to watch your step around that one.
I ignored that.
Justin Mannering, Frank said, moving on.
Justin had got himself wound up in a snarl of white Christmas lights and was giving them a helpless look. He was tall, too, but in a narrow, prematurely professorial way. Short, mousy hair already starting to recede, little rimless glasses, long, gentle face.
From Belfast, doing his PhD on sacred and profane love in Renaissance literature. Whatever profane love may be. Sounds to me like it would cost a couple of quid a minute. Mother died when he was 7, father remarried, 2 half-brothers. Justin doesn't go home much, but Daddy's a lawyer. Still pays his fees and sends money every month. Nice for some, eh?
They can't help it if their parents have money, I said absently.
They could get a bloody job, couldn't they? Lexi gave tutorials, marked papers, invigilated exams. She worked in a cafe till they moved out to Glenskeighy, and the commute got too complicated. Didn't you work in college?
I waited tables in a pub, and it sucked. No way would I have done it if I'd any choice. Getting your arse pinched by drunk accountants doesn't necessarily make you a better person.
Frank shrugged.
I don't like people who get everything for free.
Speaking of whom, Raphael Highland. Goes by Rafe, sarky little fucker. Daddy's a merchant banker, originally from Dublin, moved to London in the 70s. Mummy's a socialite. They divorced when he was 6, dumped him straight into boarding school, moved him every couple of years when Daddy got another raise and could afford to trade up. Rafe lives off his trust fund, doing his PhD on the malcontent in Jacobean drama.
Rafe was stretched out on a sofa with a glass of wine and a Santa hat, being purely ornamental and doing it well. He was ridiculously beautiful, in that way that makes a lot of guys feel a panicky urge to come out with snide comments in their deepest voices. He was the same general height and build as Justin, but his face was all bones and dangerous curves, and he was gold all over. Heavy dark blonde hair, that skin that always looks faintly tanned. Long iced tea eyes hooded like a hawk's. He was like a mask from some Egyptian prince's tomb.
Whoa, I said. All of a sudden this gig looks more tempting.
If you're good, I won't tell your fella you said that. The guy's probably a bender anyway, Frank said with crashing predictability.
Last but not least, Abigail Stone goes by Abby.
Abby wasn't pretty exactly, small with shoulder-length brown hair and a snub nose. But there was something about her face, the quirk of her eyebrows and the twist of her mouth, gave her a quizzical air that made you want to look twice. She was sitting in front of a turf fire, threading popcorn for garlands. But she was giving the camera person, Lexi presumably, a wry look. And the blur of her free hand made me think she'd just whipped a piece of popcorn at the camera.
She's a very different story, Frank said. From Dublin. Father was never on the scene. Mother dumped her in foster care when she was 10. Abby aced her leaving cert, got into Trinity, worked her arse off and came out with a first. PhD on social class in Victorian literature. Used to pay her way by cleaning offices and tutoring school kids in English. Now that she doesn't have rent to pay, Daniel doesn't charge them. She picks up a few Bob-given tutorials in college and helping her professor with research. You'll get on.
Even caught off guard like that, the four of them made you want to keep looking. Partly it was the sheer luminous perfection of it all. I could practically smell gingerbread bacon and hear carolers in the background. They were about one robin redbreast away from a greeting card. Partly it was the way they dressed, austere, almost Puritan. The guys' shirts dazzling white, knife creases in their trousers. Abby's long woolen skirt tucked demurely round her knees, not a logo or a slogan in sight. Back when I was a student, all our clothes always looked as if they'd been washed once too often in a dodgy launderette with off-brand detergent, which they had. These guys were so pristine it was almost eerie. Separately, they might have looked subdued, even boring, in the middle of Dublin's orgy of designer label self-expression. But together, they had a cool, challenging quadruple gaze that made them not just eccentric, but alien. Something from another century, remote and formidable. Like most detectives. And Frank knew this, of course he did. I've never been able to look away from anything that I can't figure out.
They're quite a bunch, I said. They're a weird bunch is what they are, according to the rest of the English department. The four of them met when they started college, almost 7 years ago now. Been inseparable ever since, no time for anyone else. They're not particularly popular in the department. The other students think they're up themselves amazingly enough. But somehow, our girl got in with them, almost as soon as she started at Trinity. Other people tried to make friends with her, but she wasn't interested. She'd set her sights on this lot.
I could see why, and I warmed towards her. Just a little. Whatever else about this girl, she hadn't had cheap taste.
What have you told them?
Frank grinned.
Once she got to the cottage and passed out, the shock and the cold sent her into a hypothermic coma. That slowed down her heartbeat, so anyone who found her could easily have thought she was dead.
Right.
Stopped the blood loss and prevented organ damage. Cooper says it's clinically ludicrous, but quite possibly plausible to those with no medical knowledge, which is fine by me. So far, no one seems to have a problem with it.
He lit up and blew smoke rings at the ceiling.
She's still unconscious, and it's touch and go, but she might well pull through. You never know.
I wasn't about to rise to that.
They'll want to see her, I said.
They already asked. Unfortunately, due to security concerns, we are unable to disclose her location at this time. He was enjoying this.
How'd they take it? I asked.
Frank thought about that for a while. Head leaned back on the sofa, smoking slowly.
Shaken up, he said at last. Naturally enough.
But there's no way of knowing whether they're all four shaky because she got stabbed, or whether one of them shaky because she might come round and tell us what happened.
They're very helpful. Answer all our questions. No reluctance. Nothing like that.
It's only afterwards that you realise they haven't actually told you very much at all.
They're an odd bunch, Cass. Hard to read. I'd love to see what you make of them.
I swept the photos into a pile and passed them back to Frank.
Okay, I said. Why did you need to come over and show me these again?
He shrugged, all wide, innocent blue eyes.
To see if you recognized any of them. That could give a whole different angle.
I don't. Come clean, Frankie. What do you want? Frank sighed. He tapped the photos methodically on the table, a line in the edges, and tucked them back into his jacket pocket.
I want to know, he said quietly, if I'm wasting my time here. I need to know if you're 100% sure that what you want is to go back into work on Monday morning to DV and forget this ever happened.
All the laughter and facade had gone out of his voice, and I knew Frank well enough to know that this was when he was most dangerous.
I'm not sure I have the option of forgetting about it, I said carefully. This thing's thrown me for a loop. I don't like it, and I don't want to get involved.
You're sure about that? Because I've been working my arse off these last 2 days, pumping everyone in sight for every detail of Lexi Madison's life.
Which would have needed doing anyway. Quit guilt-tripping me.
And if you're absolutely positive, then there's no point in you wasting any more of your time and mine by humouring me.
You wanted me to humour you, I pointed out. Just for 3 days. No commitment. Blah, blah, blah.
He nodded thoughtfully.
And that's all you've been doing here. Humouring me.
You're happy in DV.
You're sure?
The truth is that Frank had, it's a talent, hit a nerve. Maybe it was seeing him again, his grin and the fast rhythms of his voice snapping me straight back to when this job looked so shiny and fine. I just wanted to take a running leap and dive in. Maybe it was the fizz of spring in the air, tugging at me. Maybe it was just that I'd never been any good at staying miserable for any length of time. But whatever the reason, I felt like I was awake for the first time in months. And suddenly the thought of going into DV on Monday, though I had no intention of telling Frank this, made me itch all over. I was working with this Kerry man called Maher, who wore golf sweaters and thought any non-Irish accent was a source of endless amusement and breathed through his mouth when he typed. And all of a sudden I wasn't sure I could make it through another hour of his company without throwing my stapler at his head.
What's that got to do with this case? I asked.
Frank shrugged, stubbed out a cigarette.
Just curious.
The Cassie Maddox I knew wouldn't have been happy on some nice, safe 9 to 5 she could do in her sleep. That's all.
Suddenly and fiercely, I wanted Frank out of my flat. He made it feel too small, crowded and dangerous.
Yeah, well, I said, picking up the wine glasses and taking them over to the sink. Long time no see.
Cassie, Frank said behind me in his gentlest voice. What happened to you?
I found Jesus Christ as my personal savior, I said, slamming the glasses into the sink. And he doesn't approve of fucking with people's heads. I got a brain transplant. I got mad cow disease. I got stabbed, and I got older, and I got sense. You can call it whatever you like. I don't know what happened, Frank. All I know is I want some bloody peace and quiet in my life for a change. And this fucked up case and this fucked up idea of yours are unlikely to give me it. Okay?
Hey, fair enough, Frank said in an equable voice that made me feel like an idiot.
It's your call.
But if I promise not to go on about the case, can I get another glass of wine? My hands were shaking. I turned on the tap hard and didn't answer.
We can catch up. Like you said, long time no see. We'll bitch about the weather. I'll show you photos of my kid, and you can tell me all about your new fella. What happened to what's his name who you were seeing before, the barrister? I always thought he was a little square for you.
Undercover happened to Aidan. He dumped me when I kept breaking appointments. Wouldn't tell him why and wouldn't tell him what I did all day. He said I cared more about the job than about him. I rinsed out the glasses and shoved them onto the draining rack.
Unless you need time on your own to think this over, Frank added solicitously. I can understand that. It's a big decision.
I couldn't help it. After a second, I laughed. Frank can be a little bollocks when he feels like it. If I threw him out now, it would be as good as saying I was considering his wacko idea.
Okay, I said. Fine. Have all the wine you want. But if you mention this case once more, I'm going to give you a dead arm. Fair enough?
Beautiful, Frank said happily. Usually I have to pay for that kind of thing. For you, I'll do freebies any time. I threw the glasses back to him, one by one. He dried them on his shirt and reached for the wine bottle.
So, he said, what's our Sammy like in the scratcher?
We finished off the first bottle and got started on the second. Frank gave me the undercover gossip, the stuff that other squads never hear. I knew exactly what he was doing, but it still felt good. Hearing the names again, the jargon, the dangerous in-jokes and the fast, truncated professional rhythms. We played Do You Remember? The time I was at a party and Frank needed to get me some piece of info, so he sent another agent to play the rejected suitor and do a Stanley Kowalski under the window.
Lexi!
Until I came out. The time we were having an update session on a bench in Merrion Square, and I saw someone from college heading our way, so I called Frank an old pervert at the top of my lungs and flounced off. I realized that, whether I wanted to or not, I was enjoying having Frank there. I used to have people over all the time, friends, my old partner, sprawled on the sofa and staying up too late, music in the background and everyone a little tipsy. But it had been a long time since anyone but Sam had been to my flat. A longer time since I had laughed like this, and it felt good.
You know,
Frank said meditatively, a lot later, squinting into his glass. You still haven't said no. I didn't have the energy to get annoyed.
Have I said anything that sounds remotely like a yes? I inquired.
He snapped his fingers.
Here, I've got an idea. There's a case meeting tomorrow evening. Why don't you come along? That might help you decide whether you want in.
And bingo. There it was. The hook in the middle of the lures,
the real agenda behind all the chocolate biscuits and updates and concern for my emotional health.
Jesus, Frank, I said,